is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
College football week zero is here. NFL preseason nearing its end and roster cut down day approaching. I don't know about you guys, but I feel in football shape as we welcome you into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. Let's get it going alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're coast to coast as always. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas at the world's largest sports book inside Circa Resort and Casino. And Michael, back at your home office out there in Jersey. Not the home office, but the office. Back at home, though, for the first time in a while. How's it feel to be back?
Feels good. Yeah, it feels good. It was here yesterday and Ben Wilson was in, so we had a good conversation, but it is, we are in a football state of mind. There's no question. And I think that's a good thing, right? I mean, we've got college football zero. Why zero? I have no idea. We'll figure that out at one day. But we're on the road. I mean, we're getting places. We got college, pro. It's all good. We even have high school. Bergen Catholic playing IMG here in Ocean City on the beach. I mean, it can't get any better than this,
yes.
Stormy.
The wait is over. We are here. It's awesome. And we've got a jam-packed show for you today over the course of the next 2 hours. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll hit the headlines with news or noise. We'll also have Thomas Gable, sportsbook director at the Borgata in Atlantic City, in his usual Monday spot, looking ahead to this third and final week in the preseason, plus why Georgia Tech is taking so much action in the marquee week zero college football game in Dublin against Florida State. In hour two, we got the latest edition of What's on Michael's Mind and a laundry list of appointments for Michael in Step Into My Office. But where we are going to start, and coincidentally, one of these players is actually in Step Into My Office later, so maybe this is a long tease, but where we're going to start is reaction to the preseason yesterday and a quarterback announcement that we finally have. The Las Vegas Raiders have elected to go with Gardner Minshew as the starting quarterback, Michael. And listen, I know it was a 10 p.m. Eastern time kickoff this weekend, so you might not have watched it live. Maybe you were just watching the highlights, and let's use that term, highlights, pretty loosely here. But here's my question to you about this, Michael. Was this the worst game in NFL history to be a quarterback clinching job here? Like, take me through this.
Well, I mean, look, I think highlight is a great word to use this time of the year, because I think highlights can be very misleading.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams' highlights didn't really reflect the game. Mm. And in this game that you're referring to, the Cowboys and the Raiders, there were no highlights. What's more alarming about this game for Raider fans is they had their ones out there against the Cowboys twos and couldn't do anything. That was what's alarming. And so when you saw Antonio Pierce to say, well, I've got to get back and meet with the decision makers to talk about who's going to be the starter, who are the decision makers? Like, you know, you've had all these practices. You've had all this time. You're working on things. Look, I think the great John Madden said it, and we'll keep repeating it because it's so true. When you think you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any, and they don't have a quarterback. Like, when do they call Ryan Tannehill, Stormy? When do they make that phone call? When does Pittsburgh call Ryan Tannehill? They don't have a quarterback. I know Justin Fields could win MVP this year. I get that. I understand it, and we'll go for that. But when do they make that call? And in fairness to Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, the offensive line was atrocious in Pittsburgh. But that being said, there was no rhythm or continuity. And I think in Las Vegas, who cares if they name Aiden the starter or Gardner the starter? They're both going to play because they're both not good enough. Mm.
Yeah, there was no flow, did not look comfortable. For as bad as Minshew was, then Aiden O'Connell throws the pick six and you're like, okay. Before we get too deep into this, let's hear straight from the horse's mouth and Antonio Pierce, who ultimately is the guy who is making this decision. After the game on Saturday, sounded like a defeated man. Here's AP.
I mean, everything. I mean, you can't take one, you can't take the good and not take the bad, right? So wish it ended well for both gentlemen, right? And it just didn't. And we'll look at it, we'll evaluate. They both had opportunities. Aiden had 20 attempts and Minshew had 21. So about as balanced and as we can get it, and we'll look at it. Obviously, you saw what our plan was tonight. Throw the ball around, let these guys showcase what they can do, and we'll talk about it.
Hello. In AP's mind, Michael, I feel like he's still just whirling through his head. Gosh dang it. How did the Falcons take Michael Penix Jr. in the top 10 and we couldn't get him? Like that's got to be how he's feeling right now, because it's a tough look so far here in the preseason that this Raiders team, who has a quarterback battle for who's going to be the starting guy, gets bet up to a 7.5-point favorite in this game against the Cowboys. They end up with 12 points on the board, and there's no real winner here in what we saw on the field.
No, and they need a quarterback. I mean, and that's the problem. I mean, it goes back to, look, Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, wanted to get rid of Derek Carr for, just didn't think it was good enough. And Gruden resisted it because he didn't have an answer to the question, well, who do we replace him with? Josh McDaniels went with 1 year and then decided, okay, let's replace him. But we don't have an answer. The answer was supposed to be Jarrett Stidham, and then they let Stidham sign with the Denver Broncos, which made no sense at all. So this is an issue. This is an issue going on for the Raiders. You put Michael Penix and his ability on this Raider team with Tucker running those routes on the outside and Jacoby Myers running inside and whatever they get out of Devontae Adams. I mean, and then these two tight ends. But right now this offense is going to grind to a halt here. It's going to be very difficult for them to move, and then it's going to highlight their weak areas, which is their offensive line. Colton Miller's still not healthy. They have all these centers on the team. They don't have a true two guards. So they play a bunch of centers trying to play guard, which isn't good enough. And I think that's going to just keep going back and forth. They couldn't run the ball on the Cowboys. I mean, Stormy, this is the Cowboys played Julia. I mean, they got Phillips from the Buffalo Bills 3 days ago, and he was in the starting lineup. He was in the starting lineup. He went in the game. And, you know, and so, like, what are we doing?
No.
You know, we can't run the ball against the backups of the Cowboys.
Yeah, it was a tough look. 27-12, the final score there in Dallas. By the way, from the Cowboys side of things, Trey Lance, I know he's the guy I love to hate on, did look more comfortable at least and said as much after the game. The offensive line, a good reminder for people that have interest in Dallas this year, they are going to have two rookies up front on that offensive line, one of which necessity by injury. That's going to be Tyler Guyton. Cooper Beebe's going to be under center. I'm going to be the center there. The highlight of the game, though, to me, Michael, is Brandon Aubrey with this 66-yard field goal before the half. Wow. How about that?
I mean, look, the Cowboys special teams with Aubrey and Nixon and Turpin, I mean, returning kicks and Aubrey kicking field goals, they're dynamic. I mean, this is a guy that was the, you know, he doesn't even play in college. He's playing soccer at Notre Dame. Then he goes to the Birmingham Stallions. I'm sure you covered him. Yeah. But, I mean, this is remarkable. This guy's got an unbelievable leg. He's dead center with his kicks. You know, they're a good team in the kicking game. There's no question. Like, nobody wants to punt the ball to Turpin. Like, he's too good at that area. So, for me, I think when you look at the team, the Cowboys have got to get this offense, and they've got to play from in front. That's going to be critical.
Michael, more electric moment, that walk-off kick in the first half, or Patrick Mahomes and the behind-the-back pass that wasn't planned. Like, I know that it's preseason, but I still can't believe that was done in a game.
I can't either. I mean, I watched that, you know, of course, we saw that highlight 1,000 times, and it's just, you know, it's the thing that we can't really detect as scouts, as personnel guys, is this ability to have instincts to play. It's like, why is Magic Johnson a great passer? I can't explain it. He's got instincts. He sees things that I can't. You know, why are some point guards good? Why are some that don't transition to play the point very well? It's instincts. It's the same thing at the quarterback position. It's just natural. It just comes to him. And his ability to throw the ball. I mean, you see the drills he does. I mean, this summer I watched on Twitter, they had him, they basically made him run around in a circle so he got dizzy. They blindfolded him and then made him throw the ball.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And as much as I, as a 49ers fan, cannot stand the Kansas City Chiefs, what they've done over the course of the last handful of years, it's fun to see the back and forth and the relationship that Mahomes and Kelsey has. Mahomes saying on the, hey, you know, Kelsey ran the wrong route, so just trying to make something happen. Travis Kelsey making fun of his voice, saying I couldn't understand what Mahomes was saying. And it's just, it's good back and forth. That final, by the way, so Chiefs lose to the Lions 24-23, despite getting steamed up from 3.5-point favorites all the way to 9 after Andy Reid said that the starters were going to play at least a half in this spot. And hey, we told you on the show Friday, Matt Brown and I, when we were talking, that this was a game where you're one going to take first quarter, maybe first half, but even the first half doesn't get there. I want to say it was around 4.5-point favorites there, and they only had a 4-point lead at halftime. This was one of the few overs this preseason, Michael. We have had a crazy run on preseason unders, 26 and 7 through 2 weeks. The best two-week start in the preseason in 20 years. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on with Thomas Gable. But let's go back to that other quarterback controversy you talked about in Pittsburgh. Russell Wilson struggled in his preseason debut Saturday against the Bills, sacked three times on 13 dropbacks, did complete 8 of 10 passes, but just 47 yards, and Pittsburgh punted four times on those five drives. The fifth was a missed field goal. Fields, meanwhile, recovered from his tough week one performance, 11 to 17 for 92 yards, sacked just once, also ran it eight times for 42 yards. Thoughts there?
Well, I think both quarterbacks were not very good. What's concerning about Russell Wilson is we've seen this decline. We've seen this inability to have eye level up the field. And it was evident in this game. Now, look, in fairness, he got no protection. He got a lot of pressure. Buffalo decided they were coming to play. I think Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Bills, said, fellas, go out there and you play a really good first quarter, first half, and you won't have to play week three, and we'll get into a regular routine. But you have to be worried about Wilson long term. You know he's not played well over the last two seasons, and this is an indication he's really rusty. Fields is exactly who we thought he was. You know, he's going to make some plays with his feet. If he has time and he can stare down the receiver, great. But naturally, in a rhythm offense, not going to happen. I mean, I think if I'm Arthur Smith, why aren't I calling Ryan Tannehill? Because Ryan Tannehill gives them a chance. Their defense was good. Now, look, Mitchell Trubisky started a quarterback. That wasn't very pretty either.
Well, and you know, Tannehill's sitting there waiting, hoping to get a call from somebody. You imagine somebody at some point is going to pick up that phone. It's 9-3 final. So the two guys that are competing to see what they can do to make this offense run in Pittsburgh combined for 3 points. Love to see that. We're going to hit our first break of the day here. We're just getting started on the Lombardi line. But when we come back, Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa shared his thoughts, his truth on what it was like being coached by Brian Flores. We'll get Michael's reaction to that and a number of headlines around the National Football League in news or noise. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
I love this segment because it's so true. We see headlines each and every day, but what's actually newsworthy? We've got a couple here that make for interesting conversation, Michael, and I think this first one is news, but you tell me. Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa did not hold back in an interview with Dan Levitard this week when asked about the differences of being coached by his former head coach and Brian Flores compared to now in his time under Mike McDaniel. Take a listen to this.
Explain to us the difference in practical terms between having a coach who did believe in you the way that he did and the difference between that and what was happening with Flores.
Yeah, well, to put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, and then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate, you are the best whatever, you are this, you are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other?
How'd you unpack that, Michael? News or noise?
Oh, that's definitely news. I mean, look, anytime a player is that openly blunt about a coach, and we know that there was conflict between the two. I think that, you know, Tua's play there was different. He struggled. He wasn't playing well. But I think what Tua is saying is Brian crossed the line between coaching and criticism. One of the things you have to be able to do in coaching is you have to coach players. But when the player hears it as criticism, then it becomes a real problem. And that's the issue. And so for me, this is news. And I think Brian Flores is going to get asked about it today. It's not going to go away. I know Brian is a really good coach. I've watched him work. I've watched him coach, but as a head coach, things change. And I think ultimately you've got to be, he's going to have to address this, and he's going to have to, if he gets an opportunity to coach again, he's going to have to let people know. Now, you know, Tua's also got to be not as sensitive as he was, but when he says every day, you know, I don't know, my son was down there. My son was down there for 1 year with Brian Flores, not the second year when Tua came in. So, but look, you know, somebody's got to lead the team and be demanding. I get that. But there also has to be positive reinforcement.
For sure. And that's the thing, is I think there's a difference between being a demanding and constructively criticizing people as a head coach versus just like straight criticism and saying you don't deserve to be here. And so I think in addition to Mike McDaniel's system, just the confidence it sounds like he's instilled into Tua Tagovailoa has made a big difference. Dolphins owner Stephen Ross, by the way, did say this week that if this group stays healthy, he thinks they can be a Super Bowl contender, 25-1 here at Circa to win it all. A ticket, by the way, our own Paulie Howard now has in pocket, compliments of the Blackjack Invitational here where you get a Super Bowl future.
I saw you in that. Don't go shy on that. You got yourself a ticket too, you little girl. Hey, you got one too there.
We're on to Cincinnati over here, if you know what I'm saying.
I can see that.
Tua Tagovailoa.
You can't hide that smile. Oh, no.
We can talk about that a little bit later. I am a little bit excited. Right, I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
Tua, though. Fifth shot on the board to repeat as the NFL's passing leader at 8-1. He's a 25-1 shot for the MVP. Another one here I wanted to ask you about, Michael. Rookie quarterbacks, Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels, two guys that were obviously drafted in the top 12 of this year's class. They are expected QB1s for their respective teams in the Broncos and Washington Commanders. Yet neither one of their head coaches have come out and officially said they are the guy who will be starting week one. Is that news or noise?
I don't think that's news. I mean, we've known all along that Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels are going to be the starter. And we've been telling people that since day one. Jaden Daniels is pretty obvious. They signed Marcus Mariota as the backup. Same thing with Bo Nix. I mean, we knew Bo Nix was, and we thought he would beat out Jarrett Stidham, and I'm sure he has. He's not willing to give him the job yet, but I don't see this as news. It is news because it's starting quarterback, but to me, it's more of a noise element because they've already been the starter. I think there's been no doubt. What would have been real news is if Bo Nix didn't play good. Mm. Now we got a story, because then every expert who said he's not a first-round pick would be selling, see, I told you so. But I think Sean Payton knows a hell of a lot more than most of those other experts.
Pretty good opinion on quarterbacks this preseason for Bo Nix. On his seven drives, he's led the Broncos to 30 team points, 77% completion, second best among 49 QBs with 20 plus attempts. If he is the day one starter, he'll be just the second rookie quarterback in Broncos history to start a season opener, second only to the great John Elway. Okay, how about in Rams country? Matthew Stafford practicing today, still TBD, dealing with a hamstring tightness, but Rams head coach Sean McVay maintains he is not concerned about Stafford's injury. Should he be, though, given Stafford's age and the offensive line he's playing behind Michael? Is this news or noise?
No, it's just noise. I mean, you know, he's not moving. He's not going to run. And he has to elude and move in short areas. But look, Stafford's not going for 12, 15 yards every carry. He might run a little bit to secure himself to make the throw. So, nah, this is a hamstring now. I wouldn't be that worried about it at all.
It's news for me as somebody who has the Rams to make the playoffs this year. I'm glad Sean's not concerned. This is what we need. We need positivity going into the season, Michael.
Yeah, I hear you, Tua. You want your positivity. Okay.
Come on now. Let's go back to one of these rookie quarterbacks, because Raheem Morris said Michael Penix Jr. for him has shown enough to this coaching staff. He's not going to dress the rest of the preseason. News or noise?
Oh, this is news. I mean, this is idiotic news, Stormy. This is idiotic news. All right, Patrick Mahomes is throwing behind-the-back passes. The preseason is good enough for him to play in. But for Michael Penix, who's played no time in the NFL, he doesn't need any more reps. Are you kidding me? All right, so now let's go through this, Stormy. I'd love to hear your commentary on this. Taylor Heinicke's the third-string quarterback, or maybe he's the second. He's taken all the reps in the preseason, at least most of them. All right, so say Kirk Cousins gets hurt on the sixth play of the Steeler game. Who's going in?
You would imagine
Michael Penix. Reps.
That's what I'm saying. It needs to be Michael Penix. That's your answer. That's
but
why you draft him.
Because he's got no reps. I mean, how does this make any sense to you?
Well, Michael, like, it's such a well-run organization. You know that.
They've won so many Super Bowls. It's ridiculous. And they, I'll tell you what they keep doing. They keep, I mean, they're amazing.
So good. The Falcons coming up.
On giving, Stormy.
Absolutely. Their week 3 preseason game against Jacksonville coming up on Friday. They are getting 7. Jags laying it total there, 35. Tyreek Hill, Michael. So I love this kind of stuff. Tyreek Hill recently said that he thinks that he can beat Olympic gold medalist Noah Lyles in a race. Lyles responds. He says that Tyreek Hill is just clout chasing. Quote, the man dodges smoke. I don't got time for that. If he's serious about it, if he's truly serious about it, and I'm not talking to you, just talking on the internet, you're actually coming to me, talking to my agent, saying, let's set something up. If you're serious about it, you'll see me on the track. Well, here comes Tyreek Hill again on X this weekend, officially challenging Lyles. He wrote, sign the contract and lock in that 50-yard race. News or noise, Michael? Tyreek Hill challenging the Olympic gold medalist.
It's noise because we have football season. We're in week 0 of this is, college.
It's fun, though. It's fun noise.
It's fun, but it's noise. I mean, who cares? Who cares? One thing I do know about Tyreek Hill, because I was around the 49ers when Ronaldo Nehemiah was on our team, who was an Olympic hurdler, 110 meter, could do it fast. But he couldn't play football fast. Tyreek Hill's speed on the track translates to the speed on the field. Mm.
Tyreek Hill, your favorite in the Offensive Player of the Year market at 7-1. Bet 100, win 700 if Tyreek Hill can come through and stay healthy all season long. Let's have one more here, Michael. We talked a lot about that Cowboys-Raiders game, and I mentioned that it was a better day for Trey Lance. Lance himself said he, quote, felt more comfortable against the Raiders. News or noise for someone that the Cowboys are trying to develop here under Dak Prescott?
Well, I think it's news. I do. I think he's played better. Look, I think he's not going to beat out Cooper Rush. I just don't see that. But I do think he's gotten better, and he's played better. But he's not a starting quarterback in the National Football League yet. I don't think he's going to be one anytime soon. You know, we keep trying to make him because of his draft status. But unfortunately, he hasn't been able to play there. He's a kid who hasn't played a lot of football, you know. And what we see in the National Football League is you got to play a lot. Bo Nix plays a lot. Right. He played a lot, had a lot of snaps. Caleb Williams had a lot of snaps. You got to play a lot. Michael Penix has had a lot of snaps in college football. So you got to play. And unfortunately, you know, Trey Lance has it. And this has been a good summer for him. But I don't know. To me, I don't see a ceiling. I see him as the level where he is right now. It's just the game moves a little too fast for him. He just doesn't play with anticipation.
That experience comp that you mentioned with Bo Nix was the first thing that came to my mind, because you think about what Trey Lance did in college. It was very limited action at North Dakota State. He comes into the league. He gets injured. He's been here for how many years now? But Bo Nix, most experienced quarterback in all of college football. He's stepping in and making it look easy, at least in the preseason. Okay, listen, I know. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves here. Fun nonetheless. Okay, when we come back, we're going to head behind the counter with Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Last week, we saw a hard push on preseason totals over, but unders are king. Why? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line, Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Last week in the NFL preseason, we saw a number of preseason game totals get bet up, significant movement to the over, yet unders were the way to go. The run from week one continued. Unders now 26-7 through 2 weeks, 78%. Best start for preseason unders the last 20 years. Good for the books, bad for bettors, which means TG should be grinning ear to ear as we welcome him in on the Progressive guest line. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City. How we doing, TG? And I feel like I already know the answer.
Yeah, it was good. It was another good preseason week for us. I guess the only downside was it was preseason and not regular season. But unders have continued to cash. Even the dogs have continued to cash as well, and even win outright. So, you know, you saw the Chiefs game there with Detroit, where they got bet up, and that was really the line movement there was predicated on Andy Reid coming out and saying he's going to play Mahomes and all the starters there for the first half. And you really saw the line movement take place in that game, and then what happens, they end up losing that game outright. So the second halves of these preseason games are rather treacherous if you play these full game sides and totals, because I mean the second halves are just, you have no idea what's going to happen. You know you have third string guys that are not going to be on teams at all who are in there. The coaches want to get out of these games. They just want to make sure nobody gets hurt. They don't want to go to overtime. So it's been a struggle if you've been betting overs and you're just not seeing much scoring, especially in the second halves.
TG, you know, the numbers, the totals keep going up going down, and people keep betting the overs. At some point, what do you say? Wait a minute, hold on. You know, when are we, these unders are going to play with the backup quarterback? I think people get lured into thinking because the starters start games that it's going to be an explosive of points. Like, for example, Chicago's ones were playing against the Bengals twos and couldn't score.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a good point. It's a lot of these totals go up when you start to hear starters are going to be getting reps and going to be in there for a number of series or a quarter or whatever it's going to be. And it just doesn't come to fruition. And, it's really something. And I think going into last week, there was also, I've heard chatter, teams are going to be throwing the ball more and they're going to be opening up the offenses a little bit more. So there's going to be more scoring. And I think people were counting on that happening. And you didn't see it come to fruition. So another tough week for people who were betting the overs.
Well, and these numbers have been moving pretty fast and furious too. TG, any week three preseason lines that have already gotten hit over there at the Borgata?
Yeah, I mean, so we've already seen the Miami-Tampa over get hit. That's on the 23rd. So that's on Friday night, I believe. But not too much advance money coming in yet on these week three preseason games. I think, people for the most part are kind of just looking at this. And again, they're waiting. They're more or less waiting to see on what news comes out from head coaches, what game plans are going to look like before they really start firing on these games.
Hey, TJ, we saw Pittsburgh really struggle at quarterback. Russell Wilson, no protection. Justin Fields, not much better. They got to play the world champion Atlanta Falcons in the opening game of the season. I mean, has that number moved much, or are you getting any action on some of these bad exhibits in preseason? Like, did the Giants number against Minnesota move to pick them? I know it's pick them in some books in week one.
Yeah, so the Giants, like you said, basically that game is going to be a pick through most places. Specifically, the game that you stated, the Falcons and Steelers there. Steelers currently getting 3 in that one on the road. I mean, it's been a struggle. And the Steelers are one of these teams that I think there's been this consensus here where when the schedule first came out for the Steelers and the people saw that gamut of games there at the end, I think it's like the last 8 weeks of the season for them where it's so difficult. I mean, probably one of the more difficult schedules I can remember to finish up the season in recent memory. A lot of people came in and started pounding under on the season win totals. But as training camp started with both Fields and Wilson there, you seem to kind of get a little bit more optimistic from bettors on the Steelers. But I'll tell you what, it's been a struggle for both these guys. I don't know how long Wilson's going to remain as starter. We'll see. And then the Falcons, I'm sure you guys have heard the news. I'm not quite sure what their decision is there with Michael Penix, why they're shutting him down for the preseason. I would think that you'd want to get him reps because, I mean, let's face it, Kirk Cousins coming off of a major injury at his age, nothing is a sure thing there. And, you know, you're going to count on your number one draft pick come in without many snaps here in the preseason.
Very astute, one would think, but you know, we're not running the Atlanta organization. What can we say? As you mentioned, rookie quarterbacks, though, there's been a lot of love talking about guys like Bo Nix, Caleb Williams. And so I do wonder, when it comes to the offensive rookie of the year market, how is that being played over there? Are people buying into a lot of what they're seeing this preseason with those young guys?
Yeah, I think there's been a couple of plays. Now, Caleb Williams, you know, full disclosure, he has been the very short favorite here since this market opened, plus 140. So you're not getting much of a return if you want to bet on Williams. Now, Williams is certainly set up for success here in his rookie year. He has a ton of targets that he can throw to. The offense should be very good there in Chicago. Guys, though, that a little bit further down, Jaden Daniels, 6-1, Marvin Harrison, plus 750, they're both getting looks. The other guy, Malik Nabers here for the Giants, probably some local bias showing up there. We've taken the most bets in terms of ticket count on Malik Nabers at 13-1. But you've seen the number drop on Bo Nix, and that's really now that it kind of looks like, all right, Nix is probably going to be the starter. You know, he's down to 11-1, and, you know, he was up around 28-1 originally. So, you know, as things have become a little bit more clear in terms of who's going to be starting, who's going to be getting snaps, that's really what you want to look at in this offensive rookie of the year category. Who's going to be on the field the most, and then also have the opportunity to contribute the most. So, a lot of these skill position players, unless they are really going to be the number one target or get a heavy workload, probably not going to take a shot on them. Now, Marvin Harrison Jr. certainly has the ability to do that in Arizona. Probably will become a very quick and friendly target there for Kyler Murray. But right now, it's been Jaden Daniels who's been and taking some money again, just because I think the return's a little bit better at 6-1, and I think people are higher on what Cliff Kingsbury might be able to draw up for Jaden Daniels. We know he can use his legs just as well as his arm, so I think there's a lot of optimism around what kind of year he can put together for the Commanders.
Well, we know there's optimism around the Philadelphia Eagles. How much money are you taking in on that game in Brazil against the Green Bay Packers?
So, ironically, Michael, this is certainly one of the more heavily bet week one games. It's not the most heavily bet game. In terms of the money bet for us right now, the most handle is on the Browns and Cowboys, believe it or not. And the favorite has flipped in that one. Cowboys did open up as favorites. Now the Browns are 1.5-point favorites. But back to the Eagles and Packers. I mean, listen, it's a standalone game on a Friday night in a foreign country. All the Eagles fans are going to be out in force around the area at watch parties. They'll certainly be in here. And, you know, we certainly expect a big, big handle on that. And in terms of who's getting bet, well, I think we already know the answer here. You don't need to really go out on a limb to say that the Eagles are the ones taking the money here in that game.
TG, real quickly, 20 seconds, because we got to hit the break. Week zero in college football, Florida State, Georgia Tech. Are you guys getting Tech action like we're seeing out here?
Yep. So Georgia Tech opened 13.5-point dogs. They're now down to 11.5. And actually, both games there. Nevada also was a dog taking money as well in the late game there.
Good stuff, as always. Thank you so much, TG.
Thank you.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. Compliments of the Progressive guest line. Always appreciate his time. Yeah, we've seen a pretty big movement there. Lots of people buying on the plus points for Georgia Tech out there in Dublin. So excited. We're going to kick off college football this weekend. Doesn't get much better than this. Okay, we're going to hit the break. Wrapping up hour one on the Lombardi line. When we return, don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Had a really insightful conversation with sportsbook director Thomas Gable last segment. Remember, if you miss any of the show today or any day, you can always download the Lombardi Line in podcast form as well, wherever you get your podcasts, or VSiN.com/podcast. But one thing that really stuck with me, Michael, was how he said, when you asked him about the Packers-Eagles Friday game week one, he said their most bet game, despite being out there where he is located in Atlantic City, is the Cowboys-Browns game and the flip of favorites in that one. You see Cleveland now laying 2.5 points at home, total 43.5. How much is this just cementing the belief in the Cowboys slowly dissipating, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think a lot of it. And I think you have to kind of like stop for a second, right? I think it gets a little too far. You know, the media can run rampant on certain situations, and we don't know where the Cowboys are. We fully expect CeeDee Lamb to be in camp. And once CeeDee Lamb gets in camp, I thought Deuce Vaughn was very good running the other night. Now, he's a loose play runner, but he's a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when CeeDee's back and this young tackle, Guyton, has played very well this preseason, the young center can play very well. So, you know, the reports of their premature death are a little premature. And so I think we have to be careful here, because the Browns are no great team either. The Browns don't have an offensive tackle that could play against a Micah Parsons or any of the Cowboy edges. They're really beat up, not because they misplaced their tackles or they neglected the position, just because everybody's hurt. So and how good is Deshaun Watson? Yeah. I mean, how good is Deshaun? And where's Nick Chubb? Like, both these, we should call this game the question bowl. Maybe the Riddler should come out and flip the coin, because we really don't know about either one of these teams. We really don't. We know Cleveland's good at home on defense. We know Cleveland could run the football, but this is a big but. Bill Callahan was a line coach last year. He's not there this year. So the line's going to change. We don't know where they are in the passing game. So there's a lot of questions about both teams. I think, you know, Stormy, every week we talked about games to take off your list. I think this might be one I would scratch for me, because there's too much data that's not available to analyze before we get to week one.
That offensive line note and Bill Callahan no longer being there is, I think, something that's flown a little bit under the radar that will be impactful, especially considering Deshaun Watson, who you just said, do we know if Deshaun Watson's a good quarterback in 2024? I don't know the answer to that. I personally think no, but we'll have to wait and see, especially considering he's coming off a significant injury on his shoulder. So a lot of unknowns there. I agree with you. I think that's a big reason why I thought it was, you know, telling that people think they have a good read on this, and people are doubting the Cowboys that significantly despite all of the unknowns in this game. Now, Dallas, big picture, Michael, for as much as I do believe typically in the Cowboys in the regular season, the postseason, I don't have that same belief. And that's just history. That's not even my personal feelings. That's just what we have seen for the last two decades plus. And this weekend, we talked about it a little bit earlier here at Circa Resort and Casino, where I'm broadcasting from. Derek Stevens, the owner here, Mike Palm, who we have on the show each and every week, does a great job with us here at Beast, and he's a VP of operations here. They put on their Blackjack Invitational, where the 32 participants, that I was very fortunate to be one of them, got to, based on how they finished the Blackjack tournament, earn themselves a futures ticket for the Super Bowl. The Dallas Cowboys, Michael, were picked third by Robert Ruiz, took an $8,000 future at 17-1 on the Dallas Cowboys. And I guess if you think Dallas is going to be a good regular season team, they're going to make the playoffs again, so you have an opportunity to hedge. But you can't realistically think that the Dallas Cowboys are winning the Super Bowl, can you?
Well, they picked it. Robert Ruiz picked the Daniel Jones pick. He made you say, what? Who did you just pick? It's sixth overall in the draft. You just took Ruiz just made a Daniel Jones play. Eesh. I mean, it's one of those shockers. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't see that. Kyle Pitts, who thought he was going fifth overall? You know, I mean, how about Mitchie Moss having a baby, taking care of kids? They're getting up for the morning show, finishing fourth. I mean, is there a more dynamic character than Mitchie Moss? I mean, seriously.
I love it.
Where are you on this list? I saw you. Yo, there you are. You're 11th.
I finished in 10th, and
what
I picked the Bengals.
Pauly Howard? Where's Pauly Howard?
12th, just a couple $100 behind me, too. So it was very close.
And he got Miami. He and Stephen Ross must have had a conversation together before this all took place. So the first pick in the draft was the Lions. The second, the Chiefs. The Cowboys. Oh my God, Mitchie took the. Oh, I can't talk to Mitch anymore. He took the Falcons. Oh my God.
So, but Michael. While I just said what I did about the Cowboys, if you think they're going to be a playoff team in hedge, we can hate on the Atlanta Falcons as much as we want, and we will, because there is organizational dysfunction. But look at the NFC South. Honestly, like, considering the talent that they have, it's criminal if they don't win that division. So at 42-1, with the odds being what they are in a $7,000 future, that's a significant payout, big opportunity to hedge if this is a playoff team, which they should be. That perspective.
It's just they got to win the division. This isn't win the Super Bowl, right?
Well, so this ticket is to win the Super Bowl. But from a betting perspective, you have an opportunity to bet the other side once they get to the playoffs or see how they're doing. But you expect, with Mitch betting, taking this pick and doing that selection at 42-1, he thinks they're at least going to win the division and make the playoffs, and he can do what he wants with his own money from there.
Got it. I got you. No, I got it. That makes a lot of sense to me. I get it. I still would not have my name associated with that organization. No way, no how. I don't care what the hell the odds are. You know, I think I might have gone somewhere else. I like, you know, I mean, look, when I look this over, I like Cincy. I like who you got. Now, let me say this to you, just to support your pick, not because you're the co-host of the show, not because I love you, not because any of those things, but Cincinnati looked good to me this summer. Okay. They look different this summer. Their line plays more physical. Their defense is more aligned. You know, they played the Bears. See, highlights really screw you up in preseason. Highlights get the fans thinking something that's not correct. Like Caleb Williams, all we saw from the worldwide leader or from any highlight clip you watch, oh, he had a great – not at all. He made a couple throws, but that was it. That doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player. But Caleb Williams, compared to what Bo Nix did in the game, not close. Bo Nix was really good. Caleb Williams couldn't get a first down against a second-team team. Mm. Now, Bo Nix was going against the second-team Packers too, but he was very effective. So when I watched the Bengals, their second-team defense played the Bears' first-team offense as good as anybody. And then the Bengals' second-team offense played pretty good. They moved the ball down the field, and for some reason, you know, the quarterback decided not to know that he wasn't protected on his right side, and he throws a bad pick, and it kind of falls apart on him. But I was impressed with the Bengals. Like, that reinforced me on the Bengals. Mm-hmm. I think the Bengals, if they're in a line defensively where their safeties are playing well connected with Von Bell and Geno Smith back there now, I mean, you know, so I think they'll be a better team.
I like that you said they look different and you weren't just talking about Joe Burrow's hair. I'm with you. And this is the one team, right, that has proven in recent history that they can go and beat Patrick Mahomes in an AFC championship. So if Joe Burrow is healthy, and that's kind of the big if here for me, if this wrist is good, if that offensive line can hold up like I hope they can, then this should be a good pick. When Henry Wang in the draft, I saw him put up Houston Texans. I was so giddy sitting in my seat that when Derek Stevens' daughter, Whitney, who is bringing out the tickets for us to place our bets, I just like sprinted by her to go straight to the table. And she was like, Stormy, like, you can't go to the counter yet without the money. Like, we need to do this together. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I was just so excited to run to the counter and bet Cincinnati and have that be my pick. And the way that things shake out, for anybody who doesn't know, is the first place finisher gets a $12,000 future. Second was $10,000, and it kind of goes from there. So I got a $2,500 future at plus 750 on the Cincinnati Bengals. Going to try to raise this as far as I can. A winning ticket would pay out $32,000. We'll see what we can do with it. It was such a fun event. Kudos to Derek and Mike and everybody for putting this thing together. And I feel super excited to be part of it. While we're talking Circa, by the way, as well, we are gearing up for Million. We are gearing up for Survivor season. And today,
and your star appearance. I mean, you start off the whole series. I mean, look, you got the big car. All right. I mean, I'm just honored to be on the show with you. It's impressive.
What is happening? You're too much.
I'm so good.
I'm just happy I'm not stretched.
You're not even in the little car. You're in the big one over there.
I'm just happy I'm not fired yet, Michael. That's all I'm going through day to day, is just happy to still be on this network every day. But yes, for anybody who didn't know, tonight is the night. It is the debut of Circa Survivor, the quest for 9.2 million. It's part one of a 5-part docuseries. It's going to be live premiering here on VSiN.com, YouTube TV, live on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it as well. Head to VSiN.com/Survivor for more information on this bad boy, but it's so fun. You get a behind the scenes look at people like me who are involved in content for betting, professional bettors, your average Joe that's at the sports book that's sweating this thing out, the storylines that unraveled from last year, and a little tease for you. Rumor has it they're already starting to shoot for next year. So we're getting ready. This is so much fun. $1,000 to enter. Anyone can play. Anyone can win. If you haven't done it yet, do it, because you can play from anywhere in the country. You do have to sign up from here in Las Vegas, though. Hour one went by in a flash. We're going to reset for hour two. Plenty more NFL news and notes to get to. Don't go anywhere.